Napa know-how. A Napa guy knows that by the foot, there's no better ride than an old station wagon. Room for six people facing forward, two people facing backward, and a whole lot of luggage, lumber, and bicycles haphazardly strapped to the roof. If you can parallel park that beast, you can park anything. And with some quality parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep your land ship running longer, stronger. It's not obsolete. It's a rare treasure. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how.
I'm just accustomed to excellence, so.
Not doing this show, though, right?
Okay.
No, you guys are great.
Yeah, so just prepare to...
It'll be great.
It'll be perfect. Yeah.
Y'all motherfuckers don't watch us play throughout the year, to tell you the truth. I'm gonna be real with you, and I don't care if I get fined.
Got my sweet jerk off with some shoes on.
That train is off the tracks.
Who doesn't love the bounty castle?
Hitler. Just prepare to, just prepare to be awash in unbeatable goodness.
Welcome, Pacers fans. You are listening to the Unbeatables, your semi-weekly Pacers podcast, and this is episode 212, coming from Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm your host, Joey Gafrida, the man behind the dials and season ticket holder. This show, we're discussing the Pacers' inconsistent play, the perpetually petulant Boogie Cousins, and the new All-Star voting rules. All that, MI Stat of the Week. We got a preview of the game of the week, and we'll also answer an undergoogleable question. Joining me are two of our three analysts, coast to coast, like buttered toast. First from the nation's capital, Washington, D.C., it's the doctor, Jason Triplett.
What is up, Pacers fans? What is up, Undebeatables? Shout out to 2017. It's our last show of 2016, and I'm done with you, 2016. You can roll out. George Michael died.
Yeah.
That's the cherry on the top of the hot fudge crap sundae that was 2016. So,
yeah.
And Carrie Fisher had a heart attack. What the
yeah.
F?
Come yeah, what's on, that about?
Just get out of here, 2016. Go! Get!
From Indianapolis, Indiana, he's our in-house bartender, mixing up the drinks and the crappy jingles, John Colson.
What is up, Pacer Nation? It is Thirsty Thursday. Drink up. And also, Happy New Year to everybody.
Happy New Year. Yeah, man. I thought we were done with all the bad news, and then George Michael doesn't make it out of the year either. And now we got to talk about this. Topic is, why do the Pacers suck?
Is that the new name of our podcast?
No. They've been very inconsistent. You know, this the loss to the Celtics, I think, last week, you know, that hurt a lot of us. Jason, you're one of those people included. What's going on with these guys? You know, we know that their ceiling is high, but apparently their floor is also equally far down. It's a big house is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I don't know exactly what is going on, but maybe to help frame our discussion, we can touch on some things that were said in the locker room following the Boston loss, which in that game we basically had a microcosm of the Pacers season where – from quarter to quarter, it was really excellent basketball to really horrible basketball to really energetic, passionate basketball to horrible defense, bad basketball down the stretch, all in one game. And so I think the most salient quote is from George, who said, "Our identity is inconsistency. We've yet to spread from the pack. And we've yet to string some games together. We've yet to take a step back and look at the big picture and point out some things that we're doing well over the course of this season. So really, we have nothing to fall back on right now. Which I think is something that we've talked about on this show. You know, Harper, shout out to Harper, he's brought up the idea that the first third of the season, we just want to get some things on wax, as he calls it, to look back on and say, okay, this is what we do well. And maybe the Pacers now realize that they actually have to look at those things and build off of those things and figure out what those things are and maximize those capabilities. And also identify the weaknesses of the team, I think, which are inconsistency in terms of effort and defending the basketball, defending our side of the court.
Shout out to Harper as well. I'm pretty sure he coined our identity as inconsistency. I can't remember if he was talking about our show or the Pacers, but one or the other. So shout out Paul George for listening to the show. Mm-hmm. It's become a very frustrating season because, Joey, I agree with you that we've got all the parts to have a really good team, particularly in the East. And, We can't put the pieces together. And we've talked about, you know, maybe the season, if we think about it in thirds, you know, the first third, you sort of get your identity together. Second third, start gearing up. Then after the All-Star break, you know, go all the way to the finish line, play your best basketball. But after the first third of the season, we've discovered our identity is inconsistency. That's not a good place to be. I am going to lay some of this at the feet of Paul George. We touched on this last episode about his leadership, and I've got to say, we've all been in leadership positions, and it is not easy. He's what, 27 years old? I didn't know crap at 27, particularly about leading people. You know, you go on instinct. I was lucky enough to be, you know, surrounded by adult leaders in my life, ministers and whatnot. I learned some things about leadership. Didn't mean I had it all figured out. You know, you run a lab, Jason. You know, I've run restaurants. These things aren't – you've got to reach people in different ways. All of your people need different ways of being led. It's not something that – you know, you can have an innate leadership instinct and still not have all the pieces figured out. And, you know, the only way you really get good at this is reps. And I think Paul is starting to get to the point where he's getting some of those reps. I really like, and I really do believe that he is taking this season with a long-term goal, is sort of doing what a LeBron James does, let the other guys get involved. I think that's a really good step in his leadership. But the inconsistency, I think, comes from his inconsistency as a leader. And I don't want to put all of that on the at his doorstep, because I think a really good leader needs support. A really good leader needs a mentor to be able to go to and talk about when things are going wrong. And a really good leader needs lieutenants to be able to handle the pieces that he can't handle. And there are different ways to approach people that he may not be comfortable with. And I think what he's lacking right now is a mentor and a lieutenant. And that's not totally on him. I don't know if Nate's that guy, if Larry Bird's that guy to be his mentor. And I don't know if there are guys on the roster that can be his lieutenants. But I think those are the pieces he needs to figure out, because I think he's starting to get some of the big picture stuff. I think he's starting to make some steps as a leader, but I think he needs help. And I'm going to – so I guess it's not on Paul George's doorstep totally at all. But maybe he needs to find those helpful pieces.
Well, I think you know, it seems to me that he's like in the we linked to the piece you're talking about, Jason. But he, you know, he says this is at least in part, but he says this is on him. But I don't know, you know, not getting his guys ready. So to me, I mean, he understands that that's what needs to be done. But I'm again, I'm not sure if he knows how to implement that. You know, he's, you know, still a young guy, and you know, at 27, I don't. You know, I wouldn't trust myself with, you know, a butter knife at that time.
Sure.
But he's, you know, at least understands that is what's needed to be done. So that's, you know, he's on the right path at least.
I do wonder if maybe he's overthinking it a little bit, though. I mean, like, I agree with you, Colson, that leadership is a somewhat inquantifiable capacity, and there are many things that go into it. And, you know, you do need allies and mentors and infrastructure to help you do that. But I thought another telling quote from this article was C.J. Miles talking about in that Boston game, that play where he injured himself. And C.J. says, when I saw him get up by himself, I knew he wasn't coming out. And he goes on, he stepped up to show that he wanted to win the game. The guys followed suit. If he can play through that, why can't I play hard too? So at some level, you know, there are all these things that he has to do. There are politics within the locker room, and he needs lieutenants to do things. But fundamentally, I think it comes down to setting an example on the floor with his play, right? And I think it's really intriguing because Paul George, if you look statistically, he's really consistent. He scores between 17 and 25 points every game. You know, he shoots about the same. He puts in great effort on the defensive end. But maybe guys aren't seeing that, or he's not. There's some eye test that he's not meeting on a regular basis, maybe. And maybe it's because, you know, you alluded to in the last show, Colson, that his game is so smooth. He's so good that it looks effortless.
Right, right.
From the outside, I think.
You don't feel like he's killing himself for it, even though he totally is. I mean,
totally. Yeah. And I don't know how to overcome that. I mean, but I think it could be as simple as, like, early in the game, setting a tone on the defensive end. Like, if he comes out and his focus in the first quarter is, all right, I'm going to just lock my guy. I'm going to make one great defensive play or one great hustle play to get the energy going. Maybe that's a way, an inroad to these guys' psyche, the rest of his team, that is.
You know, I think about Michael Jordan and about how they used to talk about him. You know, the players that played with him talked about how they wanted to be perfect because they were afraid of him, you know, and that there was some sense in which they all had to play perfect basketball all the time or they'd catch his wrath. And, you know, you don't get that sense from Paul George, which I think is a way better situation to work under. You don't want to live in fear. This goes back to, I mean, the team also had Phil Jackson and Scottie Pippen to help mold those things and share those, you know, share those energies and whatnot. But, you know, there's maybe a sense of demanding something that just effort on the floor doesn't totally show. You know, like, you can be the hardest working guy in the room and not everybody's going to step up to meet that. You want to surround yourself with people that want to meet you where you're at, but that doesn't necessarily happen. There's got to be other ways to get this going. I agree with you. I mean, if he plays hard, people are going to want to play hard too, but that's clearly not been enough. You know, Thaddeus Young is another guy on this team that I think does all the little things. You don't draw up plays for the guy. He gets, you know, the rebounds and he'll an open shot. He passes the ball well, but you don't feel like he's killing himself. You don't feel like he's a guy that you need to follow into battle. It's another sort of smooth, relaxed guy. And he's kind of in that position where that's the guy that's your motivator, you know? Like, you know, the guy that's going to do the little things that doesn't require you to draw up a play for him is the guy you think is your motor. But he doesn't play that way. So on some level, maybe the energies of this team just don't have, you know, I don't know. I can't pick out a guy on this team that's scrappy and fiery necessarily. I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting. Probably Monte Ellis is the closest to that in his innate nature, but he is so far over the hill that his knees won't let him do that.
Sure,
anymore.
And he gets discouraged quickly, I think, when things aren't going well. You know, and so, you know, maybe a Brooks or a Stuckey, but, you know, those guys are far enough down the depth chart that you're not sure that you can follow them into battle.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment about Thaddeus Young. I hadn't really thought of that before, but he is basically the Jeff Foster of our team.
Right, he's the Dale Davis or Jeff Foster of the team.
Right, and Jeff Foster would, you know, in the first quarter of every game, get an offensive rebound that he had no business getting.
Right.
Right, and that would not only get the guys on the team involved and engaged in the game. But if we're at home, those type of plays get the crowd going,
yeah,
like immediately, especially in Indiana. They appreciate nothing more than just flat out hustle. That's on right. The basketball court. Skill is one thing, but if you're working your tail off, they will love you till the day you die, basically. So we need, I mean, we've touched on this before. I guess we need a wild card guy. We need a knucklehead, or maybe knucklehead's not the right term, but just somebody with that relentless nose for the ball or effort type of play. I thought maybe Glenn Robinson might be the guy to fill that role, and maybe he still is that guy, but
he's not there yet, though. I mean, you know,
no,
you forget he's on the floor for a long stretch of time, you know?
Yeah. And maybe C.J. Miles is a potential guy that's a lieutenant for this team. He said, you still look around sometimes, and it looks like we don't enjoy the game enough.
Hmm.
You see big plays being made, and sometimes you like see guys exhale instead of getting hyped about it. Which I thought was interesting, and I think it's consistent with what sort of we've talked about on this
team. That's the eye test, right?
Yeah.
We don't have fun.
There's minimal joy
yeah.
in playing basketball right now.
And why is that?
Even when they do things well. I think Teague is especially one of those guys that he'll make a good play and be like, whew, all right, good. I finally got a basket to go in kind of thing.
Do you think the expectations are too high? I mean, what is it that makes us not excited about good things going well?
I don't know.
It's sort of like, okay, hey, we won a game, thank goodness, and as opposed to, we won a game. Good for us, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or being like, nobody can stop us, you know?
Right.
I think that lack of joy, then, is preventing us from getting to that next stage of irrational confidence.
Which you need to win a lot of games.
To be successful in the NBA, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm.
There may be, you know, pressure, extra pressure on Teague, you know, because he's... Hometown Hero Junior, whatever we're calling him, but
last year of his contract, right? Just came out of a bad situation in Atlanta.
Yeah, and then just playing in front of the home crowd. You know, with
when he got off to such a rough start, too.
Oh yeah, that was a. But I mean, right now he's playing great, but
he is playing fantastic.
But you know, it's still I mean, that's not something he's gonna maybe used to yet. Just still playing for the Pacers and. You know, still wanting to make a good impression, still wanting to have a good season and get a new contract and all that stuff. But
yeah, but I would say over the last month, he's found himself on this team, at least on the offensive side of the ball. He's putting up double doubles on a regular basis.
Yeah,
and you know, you look at his splits for the month of December; he's averaging almost 8 assists a game, which is quite good in the NBA.
Sure.
And scoring. Lots of nights he's the scoring leader.
But you don't see him smile a lot about it.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, what's his really smiles per game? That's
really interesting. And, you know, and maybe, you know, I want to, if I could give a belated Christmas gift or a wish for the new year, it'd be for the Pacers just to relax a little bit and start enjoying the game. Because the thing is, we got a ton of talent, a bunch of nice guys. In a very soft East, just start having fun and win some games, you know, because when you're not having fun, you know, we're not having fun as fans. Right. And that's the whole point. Right. We all want to enjoy this game. And, you know, if you're going to lose spectacularly.
Go down swinging.
If you're going to win, you know, let's do it. Let's have fun.
I mean, I think, yeah, just, I mean, I just want a team that competes every night, you know, like, it is kind of a catch-22, though, because, you know, you say just relax and win some games, and I think it's almost like they need to string together 3 straight wins to feel comfortable about themselves and gain that confidence.
Right.
But they can't do that until they relax and have confidence that they can do it, you know what I mean?
They're so tightly strung right now that stringing together those 3 wins seems nearly impossible.
Yeah.
It's life, though.
Maybe the new year. They can use the new year as a, you know, as many of us do, a reset button on your life. Yeah.
Sure.
Reflect over what happened the first couple months of the season and say, okay, let's switch into a new gear for the new year.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that advice is good for the Pacers and, you know, for many of us. And I think DeMarcus Cousins could use a little reset button on his life as well.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
This gentleman is, I think, has been described as a toddler that plays basketball for a living.
He's a really big toddler.
He's a massive toddler. You know, these couple events this week. One game, he dropped 55 points while he was screaming at Myers Leonard, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
his mouthpiece fell out or was spit out. The referees decided it was spit out in anger, so he was given a second technical. So he was ejected from the game, which he sprinted off the floor. But then the replay showed, or the referees decided it was not, so he was unejected from the game, and he came out triumphantly. And interesting interviews afterwards, but the word ridiculous was said more times than was necessary. He had a verbal altercation with a Sacramento Bee writer, and then he apologized to basically everyone except the writer he was arguing with. He's acting like a child, and it's frustrating to watch. He is so talented, and the only reason this is even a topic of discussion is because he is so good. Because if it was somebody, you know, riding the pine, they would just send him elsewhere. You would just drop him. But you know, he's a maybe the best center in the league. He's up there for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, he's an Olympian and All-NBA candidate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like we have it's that time of year when we have a conversation about Boogie Cousins and whether or not he is a salvageable NBA superstar, right? I mean, in addition to these events that you discussed, Joey, he also, in a trip to New York, he and Matt Barnes got into an incident at a club, and he allegedly sucker punched a guy at the club. Now, who knows what happens? I mean, I don't know, and I don't want to lay blame at the feet of things that I don't know about. But the fact that he is consistently in these types of situations is not a good sign, right? And more so, I mean, I get, you know, I describe him as a toddler that plays basketball because the way that he reacts to these situations is, to quote Boogie Cousins, it's ridiculous, man. It's ridiculous.
Don't use his own words against him.
I mean, in that game against Portland, he for some reason thinks that Myers Leonard thinks that he can stop Boogie Cousins, or he has some made up beef against Myers Leonard, which I don't understand.
And I really hope it's not made up. I hope there's some like weird gambling.
You think
thing.
Myers yeah, yeah. Leonard is like whispering in Boogie's ear, like you can't score on me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I hope that's happening. I also hope there's some weird like. He stole his girlfriend or something, or like,
oh,
yeah, I would love it to be some like actual beef. I don't know what it is, but
he owes him money from a card game.
Because
nothing on the court makes sense. Because Boogie Cousins is an All NBA center, and Myers Leonard
is
a role player. Like,
yeah.
So why get mad at somebody who cannot stop you?
Well, and in that game, right? I mean, I understand that he's upset that he got ejected, but then the referees reverse the call in his favor, so he gets to finish out the game. They finish out the game, they get a win, and he went for 55 and 16, and he's super upset after the game. It's like everything went your way, Boogie. I don't understand what you're upset, like the fact that they had the audacity to call the technical in the first place upset you this much
while you're screaming at the opposing team's bench.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. They could have given it. I mean, so Terry Stotts' argument was, well, it wasn't that, like, the fact that his mouthpiece flew out of his mouth, that's not the tech. He was taunting the bench,
right.
Basically. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a technical. He should be out of the game for that, you know? Yeah, I don't know. And I don't know what, you know, we've had discussions about what Sacramento does with this guy. Do they continue to build around him? They've won no more than 32 games in the Boogie Cousins era in any given season. But who would trade for this guy, given his behavior?
You've got to start over if you're Sacramento at this point, right? You gave it 7 years. Is that how long it's been? Has it been that long?
I don't know, maybe not quite that.
5 years?
5 years, I think.
Yeah, you're right. They're not winning more than 32 games. You got to go get some pieces. Get some draft picks, get a young talent. I know that Boogie is an all-world talent, and like you keep thinking, you know, this is one of those guys that's hard to replace. It's clearly not working for you. You got to cough him up for something. And there are teams out there that would trade for his talent, I think.
It's not the talent that anyone's worried about.
Yeah. But I think there are teams out there that would be willing to put up with him for his talent. And I think Sacramento
needs them. Are there, though? Because I think that a team that is good, say a middle-of-the-pack team in the Eastern Conference or something like that.
So most of them?
So yeah, most exactly. Of them, yeah. Right. That are maybe building things, right? Would they want to bring in a guy that would disrupt their locker room this much?
Yeah.
And it's not even a guarantee that he's going to take them to the next level, right? I don't think he hasn't proven that he can do that. And so the only other teams that would take him are teams that are at the bottom of the barrel, which is just going to be another bad situation for
right.
him.
That's not going to make anything better. You need at least a mid-tier team that thinks they can make a step with him.
Like, I think, you know, Boston always gets tossed around as a potential destination. But I don't think – why would Boston want to deal with him? Like, he's just a – I mean, although maybe they have the infrastructure to handle him, but
– And maybe he just needs to change the scenery. I mean, maybe he will stop acting this petulant if he has, you know, some wins under his belt and a steady coach, a steady locker room, things that he hasn't had in his career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's true. I mean, what you hope for is that he becomes – Zach Randolph, right?
Sure.
I mean, Zach Randolph started his career out this way, as constantly in trouble and, you know, a leader in the league in technicals. And then he got a change of scenery and really changed his attitude in his life. But I think fundamentally it's on Boogie, right? Like, it's his behavior that is the problem. Circumstances be damned. Lots of people are in bad circumstances. It's the way that he is handling it that is concerning to me, right?
Yeah. There's something called the trick of place, where if you believe you change scenarios, you change yourself. And that's never the case. But sometimes a change of place can give you an opportunity to change yourself. You're right. It ultimately comes down to Boogie. But I think a new scenario could give him a chance to reinvent himself. And I think that needs to happen. And you're right. I don't know if Boston would do it, you know. Milwaukee certainly shouldn't, because they've got young guys that are impressionable. I'm trying to think. Maybe Orlando, but they've got so many big guys. I don't know.
But from Sacramento's perspective, I think they have to do it this year, because otherwise next year he's an expiring deal. And who would trade for an expiring deal of his caliber, I guess, without the guarantee that he's going to stick around?
Right.
When you could just wait until the offseason and try to negotiate a free agent deal.
Sure. Does he go to L.A., maybe?
I don't know. Yeah, potentially. I mean, if you're the Kings, you want to get a package of young guys and picks back.
Right.
Because you just want to hit the reset button on this whole deal.
Do you think Miles Turner, Joe Young, and 3 or 4 first-round picks.
George Niang.
And then the 2017 through 2025 first-round picks. 18
draft pick.
Sure.
You're going to give a good guy Turner, who's got this inside-outside skill, for who's younger, for a knucklehead?
When's the last time he dropped 55 points?
Boogie Cousin.
And didn't get ejected?
I mean, Boogie is a superior talent for sure, but man, I mean, we said we needed some maybe slightly crazy person on the team.
We said slightly, though. That's the thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not down on this trade. I'm just going to go ahead and say that. I'm not down. I'm picking up the old Boogie.
Yeah, me neither.
You didn't want to buy him either. And well, that didn't turn out well either.
Look where that got you.
Yeah. And the team blew up right after that. Anywho, we'll keep an eye on this. And if you don't, it's going to come to you anyway.
That's right.
I think we should take a break, gentlemen.
Indeed.
And cool off a little bit. Colson, you're all fired up, man.
I am. I'm wound up.
You need to go do some deep breathing. We'll be all right. That trade's not going down.
Okay.
I think we should listen to some Scoot Dubs. That makes me feel better.
Always. Every time.
We've mentioned that he's starting to put out more stuff. There'd been a dry spell. But I think we're on the other end of that spectrum. New track out called Avant Large. Just dropped last week. And you can pick it up on Bandcamp. It's a buck. You can pick it out. We've got a link in the show notes. But check it out. Scoot Dubs. Closing out the year strong.
Shout out.
Shout out, Scoot Dubs.
Moons will rise and seas will swell. Shadows dance and I can tell tonight. That if I get to the river's mouth, there's no feeling now. And receive a crowd if it eases down.
In flight movie, this is your life. World's gone crazy, well it has twice. People in a panic, playing with the night. And pimpin' turns a profit when it's done right. So say the know-it-alls, living in the land of the lost souls. Yo, we are leper shunning apostles. We're breaking out the frames of our minds. We must be out of our heads, cause it's a sign of the times. Under the rule of the fossils, at the feet of the father. Early morning great risers, laying wait for the monsters. Make the heavenly rosters, battle rules mark a scorecard. Having heart seems a loss, cause when the weight of the load is deemed the load of the boss. Lux, yo, we really think we're alone. Phone the mothership to make a return trip to home. 1-800-COLLECT-A spaceship, bitch, gone. Adrift in the sea of being everyone, while severing connections with every breath in this palm. Yo, I'm calm like a bomb, giving way to alarm, but nearing the center of the storm, the true heart of the ghoul will sling blade you to psalms. Yo, that's word to antimatter, recent data suggests, makes up most of the universe, so I guess, you may not matter to me, I doubt I matter to most. I'm here cold, chilling, posted up with my folks. Yo, that's me and myself and I, I'm bucking the status quo, I'm not being that guy. Yo, I'm rapping out of my psyche, rebel emotional tai chi, going critical like Fukushima Daiichi, but all in preparation for the dawning of new horizons, when a man can conquer evil. If he's eager to drop his pride, but all in due time. Build like an architect with the heart of a line. Refine the time, rewind and chain the soul in the line.
Wilder winds will sing a song, and how her soul's a haunting melody. And I like it. I don't mind the stormy days, cause in her wake the trail of pain is righteous.
Back from the break. Thanks again to Scoot Dubs.
Thank you, Scoot.
This one's produced by DJ Polaris out of Fort Wayne. F Dubs. I know we got some listeners out there. Home of the Mad Ants.
Mad Ants.
That's right. Thanks for letting everyone know that I'm such a big Mad Ants fan, Colson.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and you're about to get two permanent players from the Pacers next year.
That's right.
Pretty solid.
Next up, my stat of the week.
Joey's stat of the week.
This one, it's a follow-up stat of the week. Last time I was on, I mentioned Tom Van Arsdale, and he was the player that played the most games without ever going to the playoffs. But I got a text from friend and listener Nick Van Alsdahl that just said, Tom Van Arsdale, ! And then I realized his name was similar. And he told me that his dad, his second cousin, is Tom Van Arsdale. And Tom Van Arsdale's twin brother, Dick Van Arsdale. Which is pretty cool. So we looked, checked it out. He actually has, like, rookie cards and all that good stuff. But his brother Dick played for the Knicks, was drafted by them, went to Manual High School, south side of Indy, and went to IU, 62 to 65, and played the NBA 12 years. You know, he's been around. And when the Suns came into the league in 1968, I believe, he was the player selected in the expansion, the first player selected in the expansion draft.
Wow.
So he's the Phoenix Suns' first player, and he is known as the original Sun. Huh. And actually, after he stopped playing basketball, he stuck around and briefly coached the team for about 26 games. Was it the GM for a while, and he is actually still the team's senior vice president of player personnel.
Who's this, Tom?
This is Dick. This is Dick.
Oh, Dick.
Yeah.
Okay.
So Dick's the original son. Tom is the guy that has the longest losing streak. But they're twin brothers, is that correct?
Yes.
And they both played in the Indiana.
Yes.
Wow.
They're both from Indiana.
Yeah.
I suggested a couple episodes ago that Tom end up being our new unofficial mascot. But I think we should might as well have twin mascots. This is fantastic.
That makes more sense.
It does. The Van Arsdales.
The Van Arsdales.
No, we need to add a Harry somehow.
Tom, Dick, and Harry.
Tom, Dick.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So I think that's awesome. He's Tom and Dick are distantly related to one of our good college friends.
Yeah. Shout out, Bad Words.
Yes.
Shout out.
And fan of the show, clearly. He's listening to the show. So thanks, Nick.
Yeah.
Well, he's a big supporter.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Bad Words. And anti-shout out, though. He just beat me in fantasy football. But, you know, whatever.
He does not have the height that the Van Arsdales have, though.
No. His basketball game was limited.
Not as good as his fantasy football game.
No. True. That's true. That is a true statement.
Well, thank you, Mr. Van Arsdale, for sending that in. I think that's an awesome story. I'm glad to be whatever little part we can play in that. Next topic, we got some new rules for the All-Star voting this year. They're changing it up a little bit. I'm a little disappointed that they're making the announcement like right before, not too long before the voting starts. But it is what it is. I guess no votes have been cast already. Jason, what do you see all the new rules they're doing this year?
Yeah, so classically the All-Star game is the fans event, you know, it's a fan forum. So it's 100% fan vote decides the starting lineup. In the past, usually the fans do okay, but
Kobe.
As the growth of the internet has happened and the globalization of the game, I think the NBA is concerned that we're getting more and more precariously closer to selecting some random dude to the starting lineup. For instance, Zaza Pachulia was very close to getting voted in as a starter in the Western Conference last year, playing for the Dallas Mavs. Zaza's great, but he shouldn't be taking an All-Star spot.
But he had all of Lithuania behind him, correct?
Georgia.
All right. And perhaps Lithuania. Who knows?
Potentially, yeah. Basically, like
the Eastern Bloc.
A Twitter star, basically in Georgia, who had millions of followers, basically tweeted to his followers to vote for Zaza. Basically, anywho, so the NBA always amenable to making changes and trying to make the game better, a better fan experience. Are going to try something out this year where. Now, the fan vote will account for 50% of the vote for the All-Star starters, and then 25% each will go to current players and a panel of basketball media, I think consisting of 150 or 200 members or something like that, will vote. Those two forces combined will count for the other 50%. So I think it's kind of interesting. I mean,
That's for the starters only, right?
For the starters only, yeah. And then the reserves will still be selected by the coaches.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of interesting to include current players into this metric, given that they probably have some biases towards their teammates and whatnot. So I wonder if it will even matter, if it will just dilute out the...
Can you vote for yourself?
I believe you can vote for yourself. Okay. And you can certainly vote for your teammates. So I was surprised they didn't put stipulations like that in, that you couldn't vote for anybody on your team. But yeah, it should be interesting. I think the idea is that, you know, we just had, you know, a controversial election in the United States. And this is sort of the NBA's version of the Electoral College. They want to put second check in on the people.
That's un-American, I think.
Or is it very American?
That's also a possibility. I don't know anymore. That's what I'm saying.
Colson, do you have thoughts on this?
You know, I mean, off the top, it seems kind of ridiculous. Like the All-Star Game is a fan forum. It's a celebration for the fans. We're gonna go out there, and if, you know, a million people in Georgia want to see Zaza Pachulia, like, why not? Like, I mean, on some level, it's the fans are supposed to vote in who they want to see. You know, Joey, you mentioned Kobe Bryant. Clearly, he was past his prime when he was getting voted into the All-Star game, but the fans wanted to see Kobe Bryant in the All-Star game, so they voted him in.
Not all of them.
my only point is, you know, if we use the All-Star games to track things like greatest of all time, you know, he was better because he was in 12 All-Star games versus this guy was better because he was in 10. You know, I suppose there needs to be some checks and balances on it not being a popularity contest. But the All-Star game is technically a popularity contest for that starting lineup. So I feel like, why not? I mean, I guess I see what they're doing, because we have more and more, as we talk about ranking players, used All-Star games to help rank careers. You know, I suppose there is some sense in which you want the All-Star game to represent, you know, your best players. And, you know, Zaza Pachulia doesn't belong in that game. I get it. So I guess this is sort of an okay check and balance. It wasn't top pressing need for me for off season moves or whatever, but it's fine. It's fine. Good. We don't know who these media people are, and they don't have to tell who they voted for or who they are. So that's all kind of dark and behind closed doors, which is weird. Mm-hmm. I wonder why that's the case, but sure. Fine. I love it.
Strong words, Colson. Yeah, I mean, strong words.
I think that it's the we talk about players in historical context. That's one thing, but I think a more tangible thing is that players are negotiating for contracts and stuff like that, and saying I made
an All-Star game,
X number of All-Star teams, right, and stuff like that. You know, and we go up in arms every year about, you know, this guy got snubbed, or, you know, Kawhi Leonard hadn't made an All-Star team for the first couple of years, even though he was Defensive Player of the Year. And
sure,
in part, that's because Kobe is getting voted into the All-Star game,
right,
when he shouldn't be an All-Star, right? So there are real tangible reasons to take a second look at this. And I think it's good of the NBA to just try it out. Well, I mean, we'll see. Maybe this isn't the right formula necessarily, right, especially because, you know, you're giving a very disproportionate weight to individual players and individual media members, right?
Right.
I mean, fans account for 50% of the vote, and there's billions of us, right? And there's 450 players, and these 150 or so. Right.
So 200 people get a far more proportionate vote. Why isn't it 25% or something, you know, to sort of correct some of the things that we do wrong as people?
Well, if you want a better, bigger slice of the vote, go make a team so you can go get a vote.
Sure.
You have that option?
That's one.
Sure.
You become an NBA basketball player?
Yes.
Is that our option? Or somehow, well, I mean, I think our angle is to become into this Illuminati of basketball media.
I think our invitation is in the mail. I'm pretty sure we're going to be...
you know what, Colson? They sent it to your Twitter a long time ago, but you just don't know how to check it.
Yeah. Could somebody check that for me?
Just send me your password, okay? Just post it. However you do things.
Yeah, see, you say things like this. I don't know what that means. Post that password, whatever.
As long
that
as
means.
Paul George ends up in the All-Star game, I'm fine with this. That's my only concern. Because he's a popular guy amongst the fans.
Sure.
And I assume among the players, too. But who knows?
A lot of good forwards this year.
Yep.
He's a lock, though.
Yeah.
Right? Lock, he's a lock if it's 100% fans. But now I don't know.
I think it's a lock even if he doesn't get in the starting lineup. Mm-hmm. It's close, though. I think he's, since he missed games, is on the border. But
And Giannis is going to be a first-time All-Star pick, so that's taking a forward spot.
For sure. We'll talk about this later.
Yeah, sure.
We don't need to get into it now.
Anyway, good job, NBA. No, it's fine. I'm with you, Jason. We're trying something. It's fine. It's good.
I think it's worth trying.
Sure.
Out.
Yeah. Sure.
I think this is a personal attack against Zaza Pachulia.
Well, it is, I really do feel like it's Kobe's last year. He's terrible, but that's what the fans wanted. I don't see anything wrong with that.
I think Zaza ran a great campaign last year.
Right.
You know, if someone else wanted to win those Georgia votes, you go to Georgia.
Sure. That's right. Hillary did.
Yeah.
There you go.
Didn't work out.
Anyway. I think I need a palate cleanser here. I need to learn some new things. Colson, do you have an undergooglables for us this week?
Of course I do, sir.
Undergooglables.
That was the plan.
I'm super excited.
You told us we had to.
You said we signed up for it.
In the end, it's going to be better and more true than Google can give you.
I'd like to shout out Aaron Triplett, who is taking my call to arms very seriously. I said, send us in your undergooglable questions. Not all the fans have done it. And I said this before. You know, I think people are just thinking everybody else is going to do it, but they're not. So I want to give Aaron Triplett a shout out. She sent in a question which actually is undergooglable. I think she took it very literally, and I appreciate this from her. She asked who the kids are in the Game of the Week jingle, which is something you couldn't just Google and get the correct answer to. I don't know what comes up, but. We should maybe try to Google it. I don't know what happens, but
wait, can I take a stab at this?
Sure.
I just assumed that they are. I've just thought the whole time that they are the kids that you just don't take care of.
Yeah, sure. They're my children. Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I just assumed that the whole time.
Illegitimate. I see him once every couple months.
And force them to do labor.
Podcast-related duties.
That I'm assuming you're not compensating.
Hey, they get a cut of everything I make on this show. A whole lot of zero. So that is one of my best friends from North Carolina when I lived in Raleigh. His name is Kevin Wolf and his wife, Denise. They have two small... they're not small anymore. Two wonderful girls named Scarlett and Clementine. And last time I went to visit them in Raleigh, I said, you know, hey, will you guys help me make this jingle about the Game of the Week? And they Scarlett took it very seriously. I said, all you got to do is say Game of the Week over and over again, and I'll take the best cut of that. And her sister Clementine, who's younger by a few years, just wanted to interrupt her, and I thought it was absolutely hysterical, and so that's where that came from. It's one of my favorite jingles of all time. They're adorable. Shout out to Kevin. So Kevin Wolf is in Hearts and Daggers, a band that we have put on halftime for multiple times. Just a good dude. I was a best man at his wedding. So shout out to the Wolf family, and thanks for sending your question, Aaron. We actually have an undergoogable thing that you could Google this week. And I think it's in honor of the season. What's up with Auld Lang Syne is the question. What's up with Auld Lang Syne?
Old Angzine or Old Langzine? I thought it was old. I thought it was Auld. A-U-L-D.
Right. L-A-N-G.
Lang.
S-A-N-G.
S-Y-N-E.
I think it ends in a G, doesn't it? No. N. I don't know. I don't know how to spell it. So, okay, this brings
old
up...
Old Lang Syne. So, okay.
It's Old Lang Syne, right? But this brings up lots of questions for me. One, how to spell it.
Okay,
two,
how to pronounce it.
Two, how to pronounce it. Three, what language is it? Four, what does it mean? And then five, how is it useful in the context of a New Year's song? So there's a lot of layers to this, but I think
there are.
I think we can get close because I think we're some smart guys.
Okay, so step one, we spelled it. I think
A U L D L A N G S.
I want to say it's S Y N E.
Yeah, I think that's N-E? What it is.
Okay, sign. All right, yeah. All right, let's do that. Old Lang Syne.
What language is it?
Sign. Is it sort of a Z? Or, yeah. Zine.
Sign.
Sign? Okay.
Sign.
And then what language is it?
I think it's like some old... I think it's like a Celtic language or something.
Yeah,
like
it's definitely...
Like some sort of old English.
Old English is what I'm going with for sure.
When you say old, that's O-L-D-E, right?
Great, exactly. Okay. Ye olde pub.
Okay.
So it's Old English or some sort of...
pube.
Colony of the old British Empire. So I like Welsh or Celtic or
yes yeah. Like a
Welshish. Scottish, Irish,
one of those.
Okay
what it means, I have no idea. Old probably means old.
I'm with you. I like that.
Lang Syne. I have no idea.
Well, it may be Italian. It could be an old lasagna.
Old lasagna.
It could be.
Yeah.
That's what I always thought it was. We were just singing about our old lasagna.
Well, because the song is May Old Acquaintance Be Forgot. So maybe Lang Syne is some sort of...
Well, okay. Here's what I...
Person I know.
Well, okay. Here's what I'm willing to do, and I don't know if this breaks the rules, but can we look up the lyrics and try to catch the contents of what that means from the lyrics? Is that too cheating?
That's cheating. That's Googling the phrase.
Okay.
You can use...
Well, no, but I wasn't going to Google... I was just going to Google the lyrics of the song. Because
It's May Old Acquaintance Be Forgot and Never Brought to Mind.
See, that sounds really sad.
Something.
The rest of the lyrics, I think, are... you're just kind of...
That's what everybody goes with.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the song.
Yeah, that's the lyrics, I think.
Mm-hmm.
May old acquaintance be forgot? That sounds bad.
Yeah, clear. And never brought to mind.
Out with the old and with the new.
Okay, so that's the idea. Sure, right. So that's the song. But Auld Lang Syne's got to be old and new. Old and... just trying to go with a phrase that would make sense in that song. We decided that old is old.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't exactly know.
I'm gonna guess... So, what year did this come out? Like...
Oh, this shit is old. This is, like, medieval, right?
Okay, all right. Medieval. Going medieval on your ass. This is, and...
Yeah, I mean, if our theory is that it's some old Welshish dialect, or Scottish dialect, those things were, rampant. Pre-1800, for sure. Right?
Okay, all right, I'm with that. I like
probably
that.
Even earlier.
I like right? This is like 1500s. Let's go that way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go super old. Mm-hmm. And it's a song about moving on and leaving behind the old things that we don't care about and preparing for the new. And Old Lang Syne means old and new.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Joey, before he reads it, you got anything?
Do you agree or disagree? Something in the middle.
Something in the middle?
Yeah.
So maybe it's not old and new. Maybe it's old and medium. Old and...
Yeah, I think the theme is out with the old, in with the new. That's what I'm running with.
Okay. All right, what you got, Jason?
So it is a poem.
Mm. Clearly it's not just a poem, it's a song.
By the Scotsman Robert Burns.
Ooh.
Written in 1788 and set to the tune of a traditional folk song.
We got the Scottish part, right? Ish?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Welsh may not agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. We kind of clumped them all in together, Joe. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so the translation is old long since. Or more idiomatically, long, long ago.
Okay.
Or days gone by.
In a galaxy far, far away.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it is traditionally used to bid farewell to the old year, right?
Oh,
it's also sung at funerals.
I was going to guess that. I feel like that's where it started, right?
We're just graduations bidding and
farewell to dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it's, you know, they say it starts with a rhetorical question. You know, is it right that old times be forgotten? So it's not it's should old acquaintances be forgotten.
Oh, that's a way better song. It's way less sad.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we were a little bit off. I mean, it's much more recent than I thought, but I think in general we nailed it. It was Scotch. It's Scotch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's bidding farewell to the, bidding farewell to the old and questioning about how we take the next step.
So do you want to hear the lyrics?
Yes, I would love to hear the lyrics because no one has ever known the lyrics because they always hum them.
Just Bob Burns did, just him.
Okay, so here's the poem, I believe.
Oh, the poem,
the original. Okay, should old acquaintance be forgot and never thought upon? The flames of love extinguished and fully past and gone. Is thy sweet heart now grown so cold, that loving breast of thine, that thou canst never once reflect on auld lang syne?
Oh, that's more of a hurt lover poem there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
interesting. Mm-hmm. I like it.
Always comes back to that.
Yeah, exactly. You get your heart broken. You gotta write me a poem. Sing me a song.
A manuscript of Auld Lang Syne is held in the permanent collection of the Lilly Library at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana.
What? All right. I'm going to go visit it. I'll let you know.
With a glass of scotch and a thoughts of ex-girlfriends or something?
Sure.
Sure. Hey, man.
Always good to do it the new year.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, everything comes back to Indiana.
That's right. I don't know. Just shout like out. The Van Osdales.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, this is what I got. I got the twin Van Osdales, mascots. Their theme song will be Auld Lang Syne.
Okay.
That'd be good.
Okay. I like it.
Yeah, you know, the only thing this makes me think of is I watched National Lampoon Christmas Vacation last night.
Oh, me too.
Which is a classic. I love it. Yeah. And I just think it's so hysterical that they finished the movie with, instead of a Christmas song or Auld Lang Syne, they finish it with the national anthem. It's just so classically well done. So shout out to Christmas Vacation.
I didn't watch all the way to the end, but that's hilarious. They also do... when they say the prayer before Christmas dinner.
It's the Pledge of Allegiance.
It's the Pledge of Allegiance.
Yeah. So at the very end, the crazy Aunt Betty or whatever, she goes, mm-hmm. play ball, you know. and fun fact, I was looking up fun facts about that actress was the original voice of Betty Boop.
Oh, I saw that too somehow.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was her last film that she ever made.
She was quite the looker.
She was. And had quite the voice.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
shout out to Betty Boop. What's the actress's name?
I don't know.
Okay. Good work.
It's May something. Something.
I don't think that's true.
No.
I don't think that's true.
I don't have anything better, but should we talk about...
It is May. May Questel. Yep.
Oh.
John remembered something from Googling it. See, the only way I actually remember stuff is by saying it on this podcast, so now I remember.
Mm-hmm.
This is your body of work you leave behind?
That's right. It's my journal.
Okay,
I apologize to whoever listens to this and in the future, some sort of children or grandchildren that see this as my journal. My apologies.
Yeah, it's some poor PhD student that's doing a dissertation on the weird phenomenon that was podcasts from 2008 to 2020.
We apologize that you had to get 211 episodes in, buddy. Just turn it off. Should old acquaintance be forgot? In this case, yes, probably.
Tell that to the professor.
Oh, dear.
Well, let's get our game of the week discussed and get on to our New Year's parties.
Shout out to the Wolves.
Game of the week. Game of the week. Game of the week.
Shout out to the Wolves. This week, game of the week is against the Chicago Bulls, our eternal rivals. Probably my most hated team in the NBA.
Really?
Yeah.
More than the Knicks, more than the Heat.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, because the Heat are shells of themselves now.
Sure, sure.
The Knicks have been horrible for so long.
Yeah, but they
really had a rivalry.
They got Derrick Rose now, and he's
the Bulls
so
always
annoying.
Give us a hard time. It's ridiculous. The Bulls currently sit in ninth place in the Eastern Conference as we speak on this Monday. The Pacers are just ahead of them in the eighth spot at 15-16. The Bulls are 14-16. The Bulls are... started out the season hot, but have not been playing well of late. They've won only 3 of their last 10 games coming into this. They feature Jimmy Butler, who's a clear all-star this year, and a fading Dwayne Wade, who actually has been playing quite well this year. Joey, how many Bulls fans are going to be in attendance in Bankers Life Fieldhouse this Friday? Are you selling your tickets to Bulls fans?
I think I probably did because because I'm a bad person and was unsure of my plans at the time. So yeah, I'm happy to make money off them, but I wish they would just politely watch the game and not cheer and not wear their colors.
Okay, hear that, Chicago fans. You're welcome to come to the game. Just don't cheer or wear your colors.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why the Bulls have been losing lately. My guess is that they are really bad at scoring the basketball. They're 23rd in the league in scoring at 101 points a game. And they do not shoot the basketball well from three-point range, which they were getting away with earlier in the season because they were... commanding the glass. Basically, they were out rebounding people tremendously, and maybe that has started to come back to the mean a bit. Colson, is there a particular matchup that you are going to pay attention to in this game?
The things that occur to me is that Teague has to win the Rondo matchup. Rondo's a good defender when he wants to be, but Teague's been on fire lately, so he needs to win that matchup. Paul George and Jimmy Butler is going to be fun. They're both really good. And you know, maybe who wins that matchup. And then finally, I think what always happens is Dwayne Wade goes off on us and he has a good game against us. And if we could have a game where Dwayne Wade doesn't light us up, I think we can win it. So I'm going to look for that matchup. Maybe it's not that we necessarily stop him. Maybe he's just feeling old that day, or he sits out for rest or whatever. But I'd like him to not light us up and us walk away with a victory.
That would be great. The other matchup always to watch is Jimmy Butler and Paul George. I mean, those are two of my favorite guys in the league, actually. So watching them go to head-to-head is always entertaining. Unfortunately, Jimmy Butler tends to always get the better end of that.
I thought you were going to say the better calls.
Yeah, at the end of the game. Yeah.
That too. Team-wise, I think that the thing to watch out for is what I was alluding to earlier. So the Bulls are number one in the NBA in offensive rebound percentage. They rebound 29.4% of their own misses. And as fans of the show probably know, the Pacers are not good at getting defensive rebounds. So controlling the glass as best we can is going to be the key to victory, I think, in this game.
Yeah, keep an eye out for that.
But I think it's a doable thing. I mean, like I said, they're not playing well. They are 4-10 over their last 14 games. So not playing great ball lately. So we have an opportunity to get a win. We will have, as you listen to this, have played them on Monday. They have a second night of the back-to-back. And now we play them again on Friday. And this is a team that we're going to be fighting for playoff position with. So that these are both very critical games for the Indiana Pacers.
Let's go out and win some games.
Let's get that dub.
Yep. I'm calling this 109.95.
For us,
good guys.
Okay.
I think we lose in Chicago, but we come back and win here.
All right. Sounds good.
Okay. Well, till next time, you can find us on Twitter. We are at Undebeatables. We are on Facebook.com/TheUndebeatables. Our website is TheUndebeatables.com. There's a contact form there. You can send us all a message. You can review us on iTunes. Really helps new listeners find our show. Thanks to everyone who's done that. You can pick up a shirt at our site.
And for once always, Coach, Bobby Sick Leonard. Turn out the lights. The year is over.
I'm never going to forget Slick Leonard. He's an old acquaintance. I met him once. He was wearing a salmon jacket.
It's true.
That one I'm not going to forget.
That was a fantastic jacket.
It was amazing. He was so nice, too.
I know.
He could not be a nicer dude. Awesome. He had no idea what podcasts were, but he was really excited that we were doing one about the Pacers. It's very cool.
He at least acted like he was. So that's all I
care about. It was very gracious at the very least.
Sure. That's all I care about.
Sure.
But it was the previews for that were interesting. Like half of them were, you know, like the next Oscar type movie, you know, think piece drama kind of things, and then half of them were like the Transformer movie and the vampire movie. And I was like, what the fuck? Who would go to Fences and be like, oh, you know what I want to see is this vampire movie, like.
Cabela's is coming to Northern Virginia with a spectacular new store in Gainesville. Find everything you need for hunting, fishing, camping, and shooting sports, plus much more. Join us for our grand opening celebration Thursday, March 9th at 10 a.m. Be one of the first 500 in line and receive a Cabela's gift card worth up to $500, plus a chance to win one of three Remington firearms. See store for details. Don't miss Cabela's grand opening in Gainesville, located off I-66 and Highway 29 near Virginia Gateway.